Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 5 years into the Iraq War, the way ahead is still the subject of great debate. President Bush says, carry on. Critics charge the war is the worst foreign policy mistake in American history, and that a brisk exit is the only solution. The presidential candidates are in the thick of the debate. This hour on point, U.S. strategy in Iraq. If we stay, how long? If we go, how? And how fast? Joining me first today from Paris is Christopher Dickey, Middle East Regional Editor and Paris Bureau Chief for Newsweek magazine. He's covered the Middle East for more than two decades. He's just written an article for Newsweek looking at the next 5 years. It's headlined, Dr. Strange War. Christopher Dickey, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
We're going to go in just a couple of minutes to a couple of observers of this war with rather different views of how quickly or slowly and how the U.S. should get out or stay in. But you're beginning to introduce another perspective almost entirely here in your Dr. Strange War piece. You're saying, you know what, this may not be a get-out, stay-in thing. This may be like the Cold War, lingering, gray, just long.
That's right. I think it's completely unrealistic to talk about this as if there's going to be a victory or as if we're going to pull out. Neither thing is going to happen. The Carnegie Endowment actually recently came out with a long paper called A New Middle East, and they're right about that. What the Bush administration has done is to create a new Middle East. It's changed a lot of the givens. It's created a black hole, a failed state, right in the middle of the most valuable real estate in the region, that is to say, Iraq. And there's no getting around that. We took Saddam Hussein out, and we decided to put American troops in as the balance of power in the region. And you can't just pull them out without giving Iraq essentially to Iran and to a lot of crazy people and having the whole thing come apart. That's not good news because even very conservatively estimating the cost, it's running about $2 billion a week, and we've already lost at least or almost 4,000 American lives. So that's all bad news. But whether you think it's bad news, good news, whatever you think about it, you can't just change it by wishing it away with the words victory or a pullout.
And yet that debate, those still are kind of the terms, though taking on new colorings in the presidential contest back in the United States, it's still the way in which most Americans are looking at this. Are you saying that the country's going to wake up to a sort of much less cut and dry choice than that?
I think that's exactly right. I think McCain will not bring us victory, and neither of the Democratic candidates, neither Hillary Clinton nor Barack Obama, is going to bring us complete withdrawal. What both or all of the candidates would like to do and probably will be able to do to some extent is to reduce the number of American casualties. But think of this. As the number of American casualties goes down, the interest in the war declines, and so does the pressure to withdraw. All of that will mean probably that we will stay in Iraq at some level, several tens of thousands, if not more than 100,000 troops, for the foreseeable future, certainly through the first term of this next president and possibly well beyond that.
Christopher Dickey, you're a wise eye. You've watched this region for a long time. I want to bring in a couple of guests to help kind of expand the sometimes it seems unending debate over what to do. There are so many perspectives here. With us right now from Washington is retired Brigadier General John Johns, national security expert. He served for 26 years as an Army combat arms officer, helped develop American counterinsurgency doctrine in and after Vietnam. He retired from the Army, taught at the National Defense University for 14 years. Brigadier General John Johns, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Washington, Michael O'Hanlon, senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, been a supporter of the surge strategy in Iraq, an influential voice in charting the American path there, has written a lot, talked a lot, thought a lot about Iraq. Michael O'Hanlon, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
General Johns, let me come first to you. Christopher Dickey says we may be into a kind of twilight struggle situation in Iraq that will go on a long time, like the Cold War went on. You have been a strong advocate of getting out. How do you see the American options now in Iraq?
The options are not good. I agree that we will be there for an extended period, but not in the same way that Chris argues or Bush and McCain. It was a mistake to use U.S. combat forces in counterinsurgency. That is not an appropriate mission for them. The place where we're having success is Anbar province, where we have turned it over to the Sunni militia. That's what should have been the approach from the beginning. I don't know what Senator Clinton's plan is. She has not been specific. I do know that John McCain has said he wants to follow the Bush policy of staying the course. Obama seems to say within 16 months, get out the combat brigades. That seems to me to be following the Baker-Hamilton recommendation of the Iraqi study group and to leave behind special forces to target the al-Qaeda and advisors for the Iraqi army and police forces. It seems to me that that is the best bipartisan approach that was recommended before the so-called surge. And the whole notion that the surge has changed things and turned it around, let me first say I don't criticize the tactics of Petraeus and his team. But let's be honest, the turnaround started in 2006 when we decided to quit fighting the Sunnis and work with them. Moreover, the draconian sectarian cleansing of Baghdad had already transformed that city from 70% Sunni to 60% Shiite, with walls built between them. You have to say that a lot of the reduction in casualties and violence is due to those factors rather than the surge of 30,000 troops. So I would argue that we need to pull out and to pull out all of the combat forces when a reasonable period, and I think Obama has stated that very well. I do not see keeping the 100,000 combat troops there in an indefinite way, the way Christopher is suggesting.
Hello. Sorry, I'm my line went dead here.
This is O'Hanlon here. Who else
is
on?
Yeah, hi, it's Chris Dickey here.
Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
In general, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Everyone's here except the host.
Well, we three of us could probably have a pretty interesting discussion.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, I'm terribly sorry. I don't know what happened there, but I just dropped out of the conversation. I'm sorry for that. I'm sure you could have had a very good conversation. I could hear all of you. Forgive me. I think we're back on top of it. Michael Hanlon, I'm sorry for that. I was coming to you and asking about the 16 months, essentially, and out strategy that General Johns is endorsing and that is pretty much along the Obama lines. What do you say to it?
Well, I'm not very comfortable with it, but there may be ways to modify it that would make it a little more practical. I think I would begin by arguing that 2009 is not a good year to be rapidly embarked on a major American withdrawal, because that's the year the Iraqis go back to the polls. And there's a lot of literature in the political science world that says two things that should be sobering here. One is, as we've often heard the administration say, and I don't mean to say it's a law of physics, but it often takes about 10 years to do a successful nation-building enterprise or defeat an insurgency with a counterinsurgency operation. The second frequent rule, again, not an absolute, but a guideline, is that it often takes two cycles of elections for a country that's been either under dictatorship or, in the throes of war to come out of that and to begin to establish itself as a democracy. 2009 will be the second such election in Iraq. And if we are making for the exits at the rate of 1 to 2 brigades a month, at the very moment they're going to the polls, I think that will have two very pernicious effects. One, it will actually reduce the amount of security for the election process itself. And secondly, it will tend to make many Iraqi politicians who have often reverted back towards their sectarian base when they have gotten into trouble or been worried about the future of their country, make them even more inclined to do so yet again. There'll be less willingness to compromise, less willingness to build bridges across sectarian lines. Of the two positions, General Johns and Christopher, I lean a little closer to Christopher, but I think there is room for talking about a drawdown, an American drawdown that would be relatively rapid. I would not support an 18-month, you know, all the way out kind of plan. But I think you can talk about a drawdown starting in 2010 that would go a bit faster than what we've been considering so far. I just don't want to start it right away in the new president's term, and I want to let things settle in the Iraqi political system so we come up with a plan together with the new Iraqi government to do this right. My guess is it'll take substantially longer than 18 months, even starting in 2010. But I don't think we have to keep 100,000 troops necessarily through the whole president's next term.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 5 years in, we're having the great debate once more, what to do with Iraq, American troops in or out, or maybe Cold War style eternal. Should we stay? How long? Should we go? How fast? What's your Iraq strategy? And are you with Bush, McCain, Obama, Clinton on Iraq? Should American troops be out in a year, two? Will they be out in your lifetime? Christopher Dickey, Paris bureau chief and Middle East regional editor for Newsweek magazine, joins us from Paris. 20 years in the Mideast. He's saying in a piece in Newsweek, at Newsweek.com this week, Dr. Strange War has arrived, a kind of long, twilight struggle in Iraq with America in the middle of it. Retired Brigadier General John Johns has joined us. He goes all the way back to Vietnam, has thought and written and taught a lot about counterinsurgency. He says, go with the Iraq Study Group plan. Essentially, he says, with the Barack Obama plan, 16 months or so and combat troops out. Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution is here. He says, okay, out, but more slowly. And be careful what you say as you go and how you go. Let's listen for just a moment to President Bush yesterday at the Pentagon describing or framing military progress in Iraq as he sees it.
The surge has done more than turn the situation in Iraq around. It has opened the door to a major strategic victory in the broader war on terror. For the terrorists, Iraq was supposed to be a place where al-Qaeda rallied Arab masses to drive America out. Instead, Iraq has become the place where Arabs join with Americans to drive al-Qaeda out. In Iraq, we're witnessing the first large-scale Arab uprising against Osama bin Laden, his grim ideology, and his murderous network. And the significance of this development cannot be overstated.
President Bush yesterday. Christopher Dickey in Paris. The president says, in Iraq, we are witnessing the first large-scale Arab uprising against Osama bin Laden. Are we?
No. Not basically. There was no al-Qaeda to speak of in Iraq before the United States invasion. In the vacuum that was created after the invasion, al-Qaeda moved in. But the Iraqis hate foreigners, and to the extent that al-Qaeda was identified as an alien force in Iraq, they were always anxious to get it out of there. Zarqawi used to complain that he had a big problem with all the Iraqis because they weren't willing to go out and commit suicide and do the kinds of things that he wanted to do. What is amazing is that they got as much traction for al-Qaeda as they did in 2004 and 2005. But by 2006, you did have the population in Anbar turning against them. And one of the things that convinced the population that this was a good idea, apart from the fact that they were unemployed and they were put on the American payroll, was that the Americans said, we're going to get out. We know we're foreigners. We know you don't like us. And we're going to leave. When the Iraqis come to understand that the Americans are not going to leave, that will create a new and very unpleasant political dynamic for us. But al-Qaeda is not the problem. Iran is the problem. And when I talk about a Cold War environment, it's essentially about balancing the power of Iran. What we've done is create a situation where the government in Iraq is essentially beholden, not so much to us, but to their Iranian sponsors who kept them alive through the many decades of Saddam Hussein's rule. And that's the problem we're up against. How do you balance Iran? You know, Iraq doesn't even have an air force. it is completely dependent on us. And as a result, we're going to be there for a very long time.
I want to look at Iran and the regional picture, but let's hear just a little more first from President Bush yesterday, speaking critically about those speaking against the war in Iraq.
No one would argue that this war has not come at a high cost in lives and treasure. But those costs are necessary when we consider the cost of a strategic victory for our enemies in Iraq.
General Johns, please speak to that. Nearly 4,000 U.S. Servicemen and women dead now in Iraq, 30,000 wounded, half a trillion spent, we're told as much as $3 trillion maybe in the ultimate cost of this war. But the president says those costs are necessary when we consider the cost of a strategic victory for our enemies in Iraq. What do you say to that, General?
Well, he uses the strategic victory for our enemies in a way to justify this. You can justify a lot of military casualties, such as in World War II, if it is for a reasonable cause. This is not for a reasonable cause, and it goes far beyond just the 4,000 killed and 30,000 wounded. What we have done is push the Army to a breaking point. We are recruiting people up to the age of 42. Less than 70% of the recruits last year had high school diplomas. We are paying recruits $45,000 to enlist if they will agree to go to Iraq within 3 months. We are paying big bonuses to try to keep captains in. We've had about 50% or more of the class of 2001 from West Point have resigned. We are wrecking the Army. And to say that we're going to stay there indefinitely with 100,000 forces is absurd. Now, I agree completely with Christopher in his analysis. There was no al-Qaeda there before we went in on this ill-advised venture. John McCain and Bush like to lump the insurgents with al-Qaeda and have convinced maybe 40% of the American people that the basic counterinsurgency effort in Iraq is against al-Qaeda. That is deliberately misleading the American people. The threat is Iran, but it cannot be solved by us staying with combat forces in Iraq. Let's turn it over to them. We'll keep forces somewhere in the Middle East to deter Iran. We can do that, but we cannot do it by doing the counterinsurgency. You'll have to excuse my Vietnam experience, where we saw a light at the end of the tunnel over and over and over. Counterinsurgency and nation building are tasks for indigenous Iraqi forces, not U.S. combat forces, and we should quit trying to force it down their throats.
Michael O'Hanlon, you have written in USA Today recently warning Democrats not to get too hasty about pulling out, not to get too hypercritical of efforts there that you say have yielded some fruit. But here's General Johns with his Vietnam experience and more since then saying, you know, that light at the end of the tunnel can stay a long way for a long time. Are you then, Michael O'Hanlon, on board with John McCain? He threw out the number of 100 years at some point.
First of all, I have a lot of respect for General Johns, and I've always learned from him, and I take his points seriously, every single one of them. But I think we never had a turnaround in Vietnam that remotely compared to what we saw in Iraq in 2007. We have to be careful with analogies, as I'm sure he would agree as a general principle in military analysis. And I would not have been convinced by President Bush's rhetoric a year ago, because a year ago, whether you thought we needed to win or not, we weren't winning. And absent a better strategy, it would have made more sense to cut our losses and try to stabilize the Middle East from a different perch, using different approaches and working with different allies and conceding that Iraq was largely lost. That's where we were a year ago. I don't think we're there anymore. I think we are in a place that the bad news is it's more complicated. We don't have a simple solution, because the good news is Iraq is not totally lost. It's not going to be a resounding victory. I did not like the tone of President Bush's speech yesterday. I thought it was too triumphalist. I thought it was reflecting, again, the hubris we heard from him 5 years ago that made him so controversial in this country and abroad. And that's not the right way to view this. The right way to view this is, okay, we have some better options because we've seen a dramatic military turnaround, probably not rivaled in our history this late in a war since the turnaround in 1864 in the American Civil War. We have not had a war in which it took us 4 years to finally begin to get some positive momentum since that time. And we had a 75% reduction in the amount of violence on the ground in Iraq. That's still a lot of violence. It's still not a stable political environment, to say the least. We have a lot of problems, and that's why I think we're going to have some sustained American engagement for quite a while. But the basic point here is we never had a turnaround in Vietnam the way we've had in Iraq, and that gives us some better options, even if we are not using the victory even if we're not using the language or should not use the language of victory and winning and major triumph.
General Johns, bring your experience to bear here for us, and we'll do it carefully, as Michael Hanlon asks. But he says this is the biggest military turnaround in American military history, perhaps since 1864 and the Civil War. And so the suggestion is we need to work it and hang in there with it and not give up.
Well, he says 75% reduction. I noticed in General Petraeus said yesterday in an NPR interview that it was a 60% reduction in violence. Okay, we've had a big reduction, but as I explained, a lot of it had resulted in factors long before the surge. The sectarian cleansing in Baghdad and the decision to work with the Sunni militias to isolate the al-Qaeda.
But nevertheless, it happened with U.S. troops there working with those Sunnis, paying those Sunnis, very much engaged, not out.
Yes, and Petraeus is the best and brightest we have. Three of his brain trusts, three of his colonels are on an internet discussion group that I participate in. I have the highest respect for them, and they are following the counterinsurgency doctrine that I advocated and that was would be successful. The point is that this is a lull. I would invite the audience to just bear with us for another 6 months and let's see what happens. I am not ready to have mission accomplished number two.
And the false hopes that raised. Michael O'Hanlon, what about Christopher Dickey's point that this is perhaps ultimately not even about Iraq but about Iran next door, and that fact will keep American troops in Iraq? General John says they don't have to be in Iraq. We can checkmate or counter Iran from elsewhere. How do you see that, Michael?
Well, I see the Iran angle as very complicated, and maybe I straddle General John's and Christopher Dickey's viewpoints, because our presence in Iraq obviously makes us more easily reach targets by Iran and by its cronies and proxies than we would be if we were out of Iraq. I don't think being in Iraq is a good way for us to deal with Iran, because it makes us more vulnerable in that region, and it also breeds a certain amount of resentment, which complicates our efforts to create a Sunni-based coalition to contain Iran. So I am not going to argue that the Iraq war should be continued for the reasons of containing or checking Iran. In fact, my strategic judgment leans in the other direction. We actually have an easier time doing that if we were not in Iraq. However, Iraq itself is hugely important at this point. It is a critical country in the middle of the Persian Gulf. Instability in that country could have broader regional repercussions. And so therefore, I don't think we have a good option in leaving it to decline. In other words, we have two bad choices, staying or going. Either one is actually undesirable from the point of view of what it does to our relationship with Iran. If we go, Iraq probably collapses and Iran has opportunities to cause even more mayhem than it's doing now. If we stay, we remain targetable by those using Iranian weaponry against our forces. So I have to view this really less in terms of how we cope with Iran's challenge and more in terms of trying to stabilize Iraq, which, if at all possible, is something we should continue to try to do, in my judgment.
And then there's the issue of American public opinion. Vice President Cheney, before he got to Kabul, Afghanistan, of course, in Baghdad briefly this week, he exited. He was in Oman. He sat down with ABC's Martha Raddatz. She asked him about the high American polling disapproval rate of the war in Iraq. It's interesting to hear his response. Let's listen.
Two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So? You don't care what the American people think?
No, I think you cannot be blown off course by the fluctuations in the public opinion polls. There has, in fact, been fundamental change and transformation and improvement for the better. That's a huge accomplishment.
Christopher Dickey, there's the vice president saying, doesn't matter what the opinion polls say, you can't be blown off course.
Facts. You can't be blown off course by the facts. Well, that's basically the stand of the administration. Look, better than what? Better than before Saddam went down? No. I think that would be a hard argument to make anymore. As horrible as Saddam was, at least Iraq was a coherent nation state when he was in power. It no longer is. It is a bitterly divided collection of sectarian entities held together by the American presence right now. And part of the problem with counterinsurgency is that it assumes that we have a single government that means something to large parts of the Iraqi population. In fact, this government is a government of the Shia for the Shia, not for the Sunnis. One of the reasons the Sunnis decided to side with us and say they don't want the Americans to leave now is because they are afraid the Shia will exterminate them if the Americans leave. And they have every reason to think that that would be the case. So we're not in a situation that is in any way, shape, or form better than it was before at this point, except that Saddam is gone. Great, he's gone. But there's more terrorism, there's more violence, there's less of a country, there's more of a black hole. Nothing is better. You have to compare it to last year when things were worse. Yes, things were worse last year, but they're not good by any stretch of the imagination. And for Vice President Cheney to say that is the same kind of delusional misinterpretation of reality that got us into this mess in the first place.
Let's hear just a bit from our listeners before the break. Cappy's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Cappy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My perspective comes from, as a mother of two sons who are 4 and 6, and the worry that at some point, if we don't get out, they're going to reinstitute a draft. The thought terrifies me as a mother. I haven't supported the war from the beginning. I agree with Senator Obama, with Senator Obama's plans, and I appreciate the perspective of everyone here. What I'd love to hear is their perspective on if we do stay, do they think a draft will be reinstituted?
Let's go to our retired general. General Johns, what do you say to this mother in South Carolina?
If we pursue the Bush policies, and John McCain seems to advocate that, I see no alternative but to return to the draft. I would put it in the context of a wider service for the nation, not just for the military. But we simply cannot continue this kind of national security strategy of going anywhere we want to unseat governments we don't like. We can't do it without a huge army. I'm not in favor of that. But if you want to pursue that, then we need to put our money where our mouth is. And we also need to raise taxes to fund it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 5 years in, we're having the great debate once more about what to do with Iraq, in Iraq, American troops in or out, or maybe there for a long time. We've been joined by the Brookings Institution's Michael O'Hanlon, by retired Brigadier General John Johns, by Christopher Dickey, Middle East Bureau Regional Editor and Paris Bureau Chief for Newsweek magazine. Let's hear some of the talk that we've had on the campaign trail just in the last 24, 36 hours. Hillary Clinton gave a speech yesterday in Detroit, said it's up to the Iraqi people to take democracy into their own hands.
We have given them the precious gift of freedom, and it is up to them to decide whether or not they will use it. But we cannot win their civil war.
Cannot win their civil war, and she said there's no reason to wait to begin a troop withdrawal.
I am convinced that we can start within 60 days and do it in a responsible and careful manner.
Barack Obama in Fayetteville, North Carolina, talked about the high cost of the Iraq War yesterday.
5 years have gone by since that fateful decision. This war has now lasted longer than World War I, World War II, or the Civil War. Nearly 4,000 Americans have given their lives. Thousands more have been wounded. Even under the best case scenario, this war will cost American taxpayers well over $1 trillion.
And the cost is more than that, Obama said. Let's listen.
And where are we for all this sacrifice? We are less safe and less able to shape events abroad. We are divided at home, and our alliances around the world have been strained. The threats of a new century have roiled the waters of peace and stability, and yet America remains anchored in Iraq.
Senator John McCain has been in Iraq this week. On Tuesday in Amman, Jordan, he said it would be a mistake to pull out prematurely.
If we pull out of Iraq, then obviously the Iranian influence is dramatically increased. Al-Qaeda has greater influence and endangers the region dramatically.
Christopher Dickey, take that last point, if you would. I mean, you talked about what wasn't there before in terms of Al-Qaeda, but there's the Republican, in all likelihood, the Republican nominee saying if we pull out prematurely, Al-Qaeda has greater influence and endangers the region. True?
No, that's not true. It's true about Iran, what he was saying, but in terms of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda is increasingly a spent force, and not because of the war in Iraq. It could have been worse if Al-Qaeda had, by some incredible circumstance, been able to take over Iraq. That would have been, yes, truly a disaster, but that was never going to happen, and it is not going to happen in the future. Al-Qaeda isn't that kind of organization. It doesn't run countries. It can't run countries. It makes trouble, and ultimately it wears out its welcome, which is the case in Iraq. Iran is a problem, absolutely. And, you know, whether you think you can balance Iran by having American troops in Iraq or outside of Iraq, the truth is Iraq itself is not going to be able to play the role that it traditionally did, which is as the counterbalance to Iranian power. And as a result, we're stuck. So,
Michael O'Hanlon, do you agree? Is Iran the real issue now? And does the U.S. have to be in Iraq to counter that issue, challenge?
Well, I certainly agree with Christopher that Iran is a big concern for us in the future. And almost any option we could employ at this point would have some downsides. But I would have a somewhat different view on al-Qaeda in Iraq, and again, acknowledging it wasn't there before the war and that Mr. Bush shouldn't argue that it was, and he was actually irresponsible to do so back in 2002, 2003. But al-Qaeda in Iraq doesn't need to run that country to ruin that country. In fact, it did a very good job for a couple of years of trying to stoke a sectarian war that I think became a civil war. And what it would do would be to use suicide bombings against government forces, largely against Shia civilians, but really against all different peoples, and try to just prevent the normal functioning of the state and try to increase paranoias on one side of the sectarian divide against the other, and it worked. And so I think we do have to be cognizant of its potential to wreak mayhem and disorder. I also am not as optimistic as Christopher that it ultimately is guaranteed to run out of local acceptance. It hasn't in Western Pakistan. It did not in Afghanistan. We had to drive it out. And I'm afraid that if we were to leave Iraq, some of the Sunni sheikhs and tribal leaders who have been fighting against it would be a little more ambivalent in the sense that they would now worry first and foremost about the Shia government that I think Christopher earlier correctly argued is not always seeking to be fair towards the Sunni. And it would reinforce the tendency of various Sunni factions and sheikhs and al-Qaeda sympathizers to work together against what they would then see as a larger enemy in the Shia government. So I'm very concerned about the internal dynamics of al-Qaeda in Iraq, even if that was never a justification for the war in the first place, and even if it's been in many ways or in most ways a product of the last 5 years.
Let me ask you, General Johns says that with this Iraq war, we're breaking the U.S. military. He knows the U.S. military well. Does that mean that whether it's McCain or Clinton or Obama, we're going to be headed out of Iraq? What about, you know, the kind of language that McCain uses, the way he frames it, the as long as it takes? Do you see him putting the country on a different time frame than Obama, Clinton?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that back up because, again, General Johns, of course, does know the U.S. Army very well, but I think he slightly overstated the point. For example, I've looked at retention data on West Point graduates, and one of my West Point graduate colleagues here at Brookings has helped me get the information. And while no one is happy about the strain on the U.S. military, I don't think it's correct to say that we are at an historic low in our ability to retain those officers. In fact, the statistics say otherwise. They say that we're about at an average point. Now, I would concede the point, and I greatly share in General John's worry that we are asking too much of our men and women in uniform. I don't believe that means a draft is likely, unless we go off and wind up in a war with Iran or North Korea or someone else at the same time. But I do think we are asking too much, and it's one of the reasons I would like to see a downsizing as fast as possible. But last point, let's make no mistake. One of the last things an army wants is to be defeated in a conflict. And if you're worried about the morale and well-being of the U.S. armed forces, and yet you propose to give up on a struggle where they have, after 5 years of sacrifice, finally, I think, turned the corner, I'm not sure that's going to be good for morale either. Defeat is not a morale builder in a military any more than over-deployment is. And so we have, again, no great choices. There are downsides to anything we do here. And the good news is that regardless of where we go from this point on, where we're not going to have 20 brigades in Iraq like we did last year, we're going to be going down to 15 or below. That gives me some hope that we can tough this out, or more to the point that our brave soldiers and Marines can tough it out just as they have been for 5 years.
General Johns, you've said you support Obama's position. You see it as rather close to the bipartisan Iraq study group. What do you see him taking the U.S. out of Iraq on a different timetable than John McCain? And what about the tough this out way of looking at things?
Oh, well, I think, first of all, let me say that I agree with Christopher 100% about al-Qaeda in Iraq. 100% I agree with his analysis. The business of not having a defeat makes the argument that we've dug ourselves a big hole, let's keep digging. That, to me, is an ideological conviction for absolute tragedy. Just keep people in there, because if we pull out, we will admit defeat. Our strategy has been defeated in Iraq. It is not due to military performance. It's due to the strategic blunders from the White House and others who went for unattainable objectives. So we might as well accept that right now, that we are going to have that problem. Now, with respect to Obama versus McCain, as I see it, if Obama is the nominee for the Democratic Party, and it looks like he probably will be, the American people will have a choice.
Who knows? Yeah.
You can stay the course, the Bush policy with McCain, and he's made it quite clear he's going to do that. Or you might call it a risk to pull out, and there are risks for staying, as there are risks for pulling out. And the Obama plan has been the most specific, as I say. I believe it reflects the Baker Hamilton group. Pull out combat forces. Number two, get an aggressive diplomatic effort to get regional powers and the international institutions involved in owning the problem. And thirdly, which no one will touch, is address the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Those were the three fundamental recommendations of the Baker Hamilton group, and I think the Obama strategy hits the first two fairly close.
But if the pressures on the U.S. military as a result of this conflict are as dire as you suggest, then might John McCain be forced onto the same kind of exit timetable, exit track, as you see Obama embracing?
Hey, well, let me tell you, I have inside sources. I have private sources that have very close contact with his supporters. You take the three most, I would say, extreme members of the neocon movement that got us in there, Porteritz, Crystal, and Joe Lieberman. They are on the McCain team. On the other hand, he has people like Admiral Bobby Inman, and I'm told he is listening to Baker and Scowcroft, which would say, regardless of his rhetoric now, within 2 years, John McCain will do basically what Obama is suggesting. I have been told that. I don't know. I know John McCain well. I'm a classmate of his from the National War College. I don't know whether his current rhetoric is for real or if he is appealing to the base to get in the White House. Mm. I simply don't know, but your question is well put. I think he might come close to doing the same thing.
Let's hear from our listeners. Todd in Newport News, Virginia. Todd, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. And I just have to say that I couldn't agree more with all three of your panelists there. I spent about a year out in Afghanistan doing political military work. And having a bit of a background in something like this, my question would be, how would an early pullout not embolden, the fundamentalists who are looking to cause damage to our country? Because I think irrespective of a time frame, whenever it happens, it's going to be bad for us regardless. So, and I do have to agree with what Mike and Chris were both saying, is that I think there's risks for staying, risks for going. I think what we're looking at is minimizing the risk, because either way, it's going to be bad. So I just wanted to get an idea from all three of the your panelists there, what their thoughts are on as far as what would be the lesser of two evils there, because regardless, I just don't think democracy is ever going to work in the Middle East. Regardless, they from my experience, it's not what they want. They don't want it. They never will, never have, and I just don't think it's going to work. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Todd, thanks for calling. Christopher Dickey, first to you. I mean, putting Iran aside for a moment, you say it can't be put aside. We get that. But Todd has served in Afghanistan. He says he pulls the curtain wider and include the whole region here. If you start pulling out, how do you not embolden the fundamentalists, as he says?
Well, by killing the fundamentalists, that's what you do. I mean, no matter what we do, whether we stay, whether we pull out, we're going to hear the propaganda from the fundamentalists that we have made the wrong decision. So we can't let them make our decisions for us. If we're talking about the Iraqi situation, I think it is important that we understand as Americans that we have humiliated the Iraqis. We have humiliated them by occupying their country. We even humiliated them by taking out Saddam, which was something that none of them could do. Mm. And they are never going to forgive us for that. So we are going to be in a position for a long time where we are going to have this tense relationship with the people that we claim to have liberated, and eventually they will ask us to leave. So I think we need to look at that. But in terms of the emboldened fundamentalists, I think the most effective way we can deal with them is to minimize them as a threat, not maximize them, and take out those cells that can be identified that are connected to the terrorism that actually threatens the United States. President Bush was very clear yesterday that the United States took out Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the guy who planned 9/11, weeks before the invasion began in Iraq. They took him out in Pakistan. In fact, virtually all of the people connected with 9/11, except for Osama bin Laden himself and Ayman Zawahiri, had been captured or killed by the United States before the invasion of Iraq. We could have declared victory in the war against the terrorists of 9/11 then, but the Bush administration wanted to continue the war for what I think are essentially other reasons.
Michael O'Hanlon, General John says, John McCain, whatever he says now, there's a good chance within 2 years, not so different from Obama's timetable, he'll be headed out of Iraq too. Do you agree?
Well, let me put this in a light way, Tom. I was hoping you'd ask. I do not know Senator McCain. He's not a friend of mine, and I feel sure, however, that General Johns is wrong. I feel that if there's one thing we know from Senator McCain's career, he is resolute on matters of war and peace, for better or for worse. I'm not saying it's always a virtue. I have some disagreements with him, for example, on his willingness to contemplate too quickly, I believe, the use of military force against North Korea back in 1994, for example. But I think we do know from the Kosovo War – a war, for example, that most Republicans opposed and John McCain was not crazy about initially, but supported once it was underway because he felt we as a nation cannot afford to give up on struggles that are still salvageable. I think there's one thing we know about John McCain. He's pretty resolute on these sort of things. And while he would look to begin a drawdown as soon as he could, he's not going to be completing it within 2 years.
Well, yes.
Could I comment on
General,
that,
General, please, yes.
Yes. Let me clarify my position. I was telling you what some informed sources said.
Mm-hmm.
I have said in a separate paper that my knowledge of John McCain is exactly what Michael O'Hanlon mm-hmm. has just stated. He is dogmatic. He is a hawk. I believe he will dig in his heels. And I personally believe he will continue to stay the course of George Bush. I was only reporting that some of my friends say otherwise, and I will tell you I don't know. But my knowledge of him is that he will stay the course.
Duly noted, sir. And with that, I guess it puts the whole issue right where perhaps it is inevitably, in the hands of voters looking at these candidates and the alternate paths ahead. I'm so grateful to each of you for being with us this hour. Christopher Dickey in Paris, regional editor for the Middle East for the Newsweek magazine. Great to have you. Christopher, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Retired Brigadier General John Johns in Washington. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Michael O'Hanlon at the Brookings Institution. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.